Today is Thursday, January 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington.
And I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Coming up, the International Court of Justice at The Hague has ruled against Myanmar over the alleged genocide of the Rohingya people.
Myanmar must, in accordance with its obligations under the convention and in relation to the members of the Rohingya group in its territory, take all measures within its power to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of Article 2 of the Genocide Convention.
We'll have that story and more coming up next. Our top story today, Chinese authorities are locking down three cities that are home to more than 18 million people in an unprecedented effort to try to contain a new virus that has sickened hundreds and spread to other parts of the world during the busy Lunar New Year travel period. The train station and the airport in Wuhan, the epicenter of the outbreak, are shut down, and bus, ferry, and subway service has been halted. The open-ended lockdowns are unprecedented in size, embracing more people than the population of the entire nation of Zambia. In Wuhan on Thursday, residents scrambled for supplies, clearing out supermarket shelves and market stalls. Videos shared on social media showed empty shelves. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization Executive Committee meets for the second day to decide whether to declare the outbreak of coronavirus in China a global emergency. The committee was split on the question Wednesday. For more, we go live to Yibing Feng from VOA's Mandarin service in Beijing. Hi, Yibing.
Hi. Hey.
Thanks for joining us. I know it's quite late there in Beijing. How are people in the capital reacting to the outbreak, especially given the timing around the Lunar New Year Spring Festival?
Right. Yeah. The cases of coronavirus infection in mainland China have increased dramatically over the last 2 days. Right now, the updated figure, let me check. According to what I have from the medical professional website in China, the confirmed cases, reached 644
and
half an hour ago.
And how are the citizens in Beijing reacting to this? Are people nervous? Are people staying at home and not traveling to visit their families for the holiday? What is it like in the city right now?
Some are pretty worried, but some are just still looking for ways that the government might have to deal with the disease. And so they, some of them just rely on the official media for news about this the disease.
One last question: how is the media coverage? Is there enough information coming out? Are people able to access information about what is happening with the disease and how to prevent it?
Not up to just about a week ago, did the Chinese official media update the cases and the situation. So the general of the public was not quite aware of the situation until recently. And also, some of the local citizens in Wuhan, they spread some kind of information, through some kind of ways that, were the access to the probably the medical data. They just send some information on the Chinese style Facebook, which is called Weibo here in China, WeChat in China. So, and they were summoned by the police and, you know, got warning, saying that if they continue to, you know, send information, unofficial information online, they would be punished.
That sounds like a very difficult situation. Thank you, Yubing, for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
The UN's International Court of Justice has ruled that Myanmar must, quote, take all measures within its power, end quote, to prevent any acts of genocide against the Rohingya, the ethnic group that was forced to flee their homes amid a bloody crackdown in 2017.
Myanmar must, in accordance with its obligations under the convention and in relation to the members of the Rohingya group in its territory, take all measures within its power to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of Article 2 of the Genocide Convention.
The court's ruling Thursday was in response to a complaint filed last November by West African nation The Gambia on behalf of the 57-nation Organization of Islamic Cooperation, accusing Myanmar of committing genocide of the Rohingya Muslim minority. More than 700,000 Rohingya fled across the border into Bangladesh in August 2017 to escape a campaign launched by the Myanmar military following attacks on security posts by Rohingya militants. A UN investigation concluded the campaign was carried out, quote, with genocidal intent, end quote, based on interviews with survivors. Reading the court's opinion from The Hague, President Abdulkawi Ahmed Yusuf said the Rohingya remained at a, quote, real and imminent risk, end quote, of persecution at the hands of the military.
The court further takes note of the detailed findings of the fact-finding mission on Myanmar, in which, I quote, it is concluded on reasonable grounds that the Rohingya people remain at serious risk of genocide.
The court ordered Myanmar to ensure those responsible for the genocide be held responsible and to ensure that the military and any allied armed groups do not commit acts of genocide or involve themselves in conspiracy to trigger genocide against Rohingya. Our correspondent Tahira Arifa is in The Hague and described to us the scene at the courtroom after the verdict was announced.
Immediately when all the parties came from the courtroom, they came out, we have asked Myanmar representative any reaction, whether they are happy or not happy. They just refused to say anything. They immediately get into the car and leave the place. And on the other hand, Rohingya people see it their victory, not only their victory, it is victory for human rights. So they are very happy. Immediately when I came out from the courtroom and there was a happy faces there, and also Gambian Justice Minister, Mr. Abubakar Tambadao, he also said this is the first step to establish a human right for the Rohingya right.
The IJC also ordered Myanmar to submit a report within 4 months on its actions to comply with the court's decision.
On the second day of the impeachment trial, congressional Democrats accused President Donald Trump of putting pressure on Ukraine into investigating his leading 2020 election rival, former Vice President Joe Biden. As Trump's impeachment trial enters its third day, Democrats will try to show how his alleged corruption scheme to benefit himself politically fits into the country's constitutional requirement that he committed, quote, high crimes and misdemeanors. For more on this, we are joined by VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. Catherine, thank you for joining us.
You're so welcome.
So in hours of arguments, Democrats led by impeachment manager Representative Adam Schiff tried to win over skeptical Republican senators, including, quoting Hamilton and and providing all types of evidence. How compelling a case did they make yesterday?
Well, if you spoke to Republican senators yesterday, Adam Schiff did not make a compelling case. They said that this is the same thing that they've heard before during the House impeachment process. And a lot of the Republican senators were telling me that they're reserving judgment until President Trump's lawyers come on and present their case on Saturday. They're telling me that they think it's going to be a game changer because really the president has not had an opportunity to defend himself yet. They're waiting for all of the information to come in, or at least that's what they're saying to me.
And what should we be expecting today as the trial enters its third day?
Well, we're going to see Adam Schiff and the other impeachment managers really play out that case as to why the abuse of power meets the constitutional standard for impeachment. They're going to talk about why it's actually the highest offense that a president can commit because he's abusing the power of the presidency for his own personal gain. We'll really get into the details on that today.
And how are the senators making their case in public? Does it appear that either side is winning public opinion so far?
Well, we do know that about anywhere from 60 to 70% of the American public wants to have the witnesses called, wants to see that evidence that Democrats have been fighting for. Believe me, that is something that's going to be in the top of Mitch McConnell's mind. He does not want this trial to look like a sham going into the 2020 elections when many of his senators are in vulnerable districts or seeking re-election. He needs to hit that balance where he runs a fair trial, but he makes sure that he's giving President Trump political cover from Capitol Hill.
And Republican senators have said that they have not heard anything new from yesterday's presentations. Will this likely compel them to call for further evidence, including, say, perhaps calling for witnesses and documents related to this case?
Well, what's being discussed up on the Hill is something of a witness trade, where Democrats would be allowed to call OMB Director Mick Mulvaney or former Ambassador John Bolton to talk about what they know about the Ukraine scandal. And in return, Republicans would get to call former Vice President Joe Biden, who, of course, is on the campaign trail right now. Biden himself said yesterday there's not a chance of that happening, that that would be giving into the Republicans' attempt to smear him while he's running against President Trump.
That was VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. Thank you, Catherine.
You're so welcome.
Among the top stories in the world, President Donald Trump's administration rolled out a new rule on Thursday that aims to limit arrivals by pregnant women who enter the United States on tourist visas with the intention of obtaining citizenship for their babies born on U.S. soil. And at the World Economic Forum, Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel urged climate change skeptics and activists to open a dialogue to tackle concerns about the planet's future. Last of all, Russian lawmakers on Thursday quickly gave preliminary approval to constitutional changes widely seen as an attempt by President Vladimir Putin to remain in charge after his current term ends in 2024. You are listening to International Edition from the Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists from Australia's Curtin University have precisely dated Earth's oldest asteroid impact crater and found evidence that the asteroid strike that formed it may have ended a global ice age. Researchers say that the 70-kilometer-wide Yarrabubba crater, located in the outback of Western Australia, was formed after an asteroid slammed into Earth 2.229 billion years ago. At that time, the entire planet was covered in glacial ice, which is known as a snowball Earth. The researchers say they think the impact of the asteroid vaporized a large amount of the glacial ice, sending half a trillion tons of water vapor into the atmosphere. Since water vapor is considered a significant greenhouse gas and a driver of climate change, it's thought that this volume of the atmospheric vapor caused a period of global warming, which thawed much of Snowball Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States are expanding in Africa. HBCUs on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The government of Angola could issue an international arrest warrant for billionaire Isabel dos Santos if she fails to cooperate with a fraud investigation in which has been named as a suspect. Angola's Attorney General Helder Peter Gross, meeting with her counterpart in Portugal, said that the suspects in a corruption case would be asked to voluntarily come to face justice. Failing that, his office would resort to legal instruments, including an international warrant. For more on this, I reached Angolan anti-corruption activist Rafael Marquez in Luanda. Rafael is known for his investigative work on corruption in Angola and was jailed by the government of former President Dos Santos, Isabel Dos Santos's father, for speaking out against alleged mismanagement and misappropriation of funds. I asked him what he thinks of the prospect of the Angolan government issuing an arrest warrant against Isabela Dos Santos.
It was long overdue because Isabel Dos Santos has become very defiant, and the government has offered a moratorium, which society had not agreed with, in which all those who looted the country had over 6 months to return some of their assets and negotiate with the government. And she refused to take that offer. There's only a few, a handful of officials decided to take to negotiate with the authorities and return some of the assets they had taken from the state and money they had looted from the state coffers.
Isabel says that, you know, the source of her wealth is because she's a shrewd, skilled businesswoman who started off small. She was selling eggs by the street side at a young age. Do you dispute the characterization of this as a source of her wealth?
Isabel Dos Santos is a pathological liar because as long as she can remember, she's been the daughter of a minister and the president. President Dos Santos, her father, never had any other job except being for a short stint in the guerrilla and then being a minister. So when did Isabel sell eggs in the street? That was a lie. And who can believe that the daughter of a minister, 6 years old, would make money selling eggs in the street? And we are also trying to forget that back in those days, Angola was a communist country. Private initiative was forbidden.
You were one of the first people to raise concerns about corruption in Angola, and especially Isabela Dos Santos's wealth. Why do you think that it took this long for this story to gain attention of both the government of Angola and the international community?
The reason why this story took too long is because as long as it is an African thing, things are wrong in the continent. Things are wrong in my own country. No one pays attention. It has to be Western journalists to say what I have already reported on for several years. Some of the details are new. But the bulk of the information that was disclosed by the consortium had already been reported by me. But who paid attention? I was called an activist, an anti-government person. So Western journalists did that, and they're called investigative journalists. It's just the difference.
Some people have said that all of this fight against corruption coming after Isabela Dos Santos, that it is kind of a political vendetta by the current president and the government of Angola to go after the former president and his family. What do you say about that?
That's totally untrue, because you have many government officials who have already been locked up for corruption. You have many generals who have been named formal suspects, and especially middle-level public officials who are already sitting in jail for charges on corruption, money laundering, and so forth. And you can see in Isabel Dos Santos' argument, she was not able ever once to explain which laws the government were using or were abusing. to prosecute her.
That was Rafael Marquez. He was speaking to me from Angola's capital, Luanda.
Dozens of world leaders are in Jerusalem for the largest ever gathering focused on commemorating the Holocaust and combating rising modern-day anti-Semitism. The leaders include Russian President Vladimir Putin, French President Emmanuel Macron, Britain's Prince Charles, Vice President Mike Pence of the U.S., and the presidents of Germany, Italy, and Austria. They're attending the World Holocaust Forum, which coincides with the 75th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp. AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
Dozens of world leaders have descended upon Jerusalem for the largest ever gathering focusing on commemorating the Holocaust and combating modern-day anti-Semitism. Leaders and senior officials, including Vice President Mike Pence, Russia's Vladimir Putin, and France's Emmanuel Macron, are among more than 40 dignitaries attending the World Holocaust Forum, which coincides with the 75th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp. The three-hour-long ceremony at Jerusalem's Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial, called Remembering the Holocaust, Fighting Anti-Semitism, looks to project a united front in commemorating the genocide of European Jewry amid a global spike in anti-Jewish violence today. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Xenophobic violence has erupted in the South African township of Diepsloot, north of Johannesburg. Local residents have shut down the entire township, demanding that all undocumented foreign nationals must leave. They accuse foreign nationals of being behind recent murders in the area. Tuto Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The violence erupted Wednesday night and spilled over into Thursday, with locals taking to the streets and blockading all roads in the area. Community members speaking to the media say they want police to arrest and remove foreigners without proper residency permits.
Our native South Africans are dying here in Diepsloot in a mercy of foreign people who are not even documented. We want the government to come and intervene. They can bring all their police forces, the soldiers, they can raid these people. Everyone who's undocumented, please, they can just leave us in peace. You are not safe like this.
Locals accuse foreign nationals of being behind the recent killing of a police officer and two community members. The township was under total shutdown Thursday, with stones, trash and burning tires blocking the roads. Most children did not go to school, and many workers were left stranded as cars, buses and taxis headed into the area were pelted with stones and forced to make a U-turn. One foreign national shop owner, who did not want his name revealed, said he was worried about what will happen next.
Now we can see even the police, everyone is protecting us. We never see anything that's breaking shops and doing something funny. We don't know what's going to be happening in the night, but we're scared. But we are still deciding what we're going to do. But for now, the community say we're supposed to close the shops. So we did already, but we don't know about our lives.
Ngabuto Mabena, chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, expressed disappointment that a few foreign nationals continue to tarnish the image of others by committing crime. One of the suspects arrested for the police officer's murder is reported to be a Zimbabwean.
We send our condolences to the family of the police officer and condemn in the strongest terms what happened, and we call on the Zimbabwean community in South Africa to desist from any act of criminality. We are thus calling on the police to arrest these perpetrators. We are also calling our own community members to isolate these criminal elements in our society.
Police had to use tear gas and rubber bullets as large group.
That was Tuso Komalo in Johannesburg. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to our director, Nadia Taha, our engineer, Zainab Abdulrahman. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, together with Jason Pitinkin. Enjoy your day, everyone.